Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank by applying the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sari Ibrahim. Today, I'm interviewing Mark Willis. Mark is a man on a mission to help you think differently about your money, your economy, and your future. Mark is a certified financial planner, a three-time number one bestselling author, and the owner of Lake Growth Financial Services, a financial firm in Chicago, Illinois. As co-host of the Not Your Average Financial Podcast, he shares some of his strategies for investing in real estate, paying for college without going broke, and creating an income in retirement you will not outlive. Mark works with people who want to grow their wealth in ways that are safe and predictable to become their own source of financing and create tax-free income in retirement. Mark, welcome back to our podcast.
Sari, so glad to be back, man.
Thank you. For those of you who don't know Mark Willis, I'll go back to episode one. He was my first guest on this podcast. He's also my mentor. He's helped me grow my business, financial asset protection, as well as this podcast, Thinking Like a Bank. So thank you for your help and your support throughout this period.
Well, you show me as much as if I've shared with things with you, you've shared with me. You've taught me quite a bit about the podcasting landscape and the financial landscape and business building and helping clients. So thank you, Sari, for your good work.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. So Mark, yeah, I wanted to talk about like two main topics for today. One of them being the importance of working with a bank on yourself professional, and then the importance of making sure you use cash value whole life insurance rather than index universal life or variable universal life. So I know there's a lot to unpack there, but maybe we could start first with what does it mean to be a bank on yourself professional?
Well, they sound like two different topics, but they're really the same topic. Uh-huh. And, I want to start with just a case study. Let's imagine that you need to get up to your friend's high-rise apartment, mm-hmm. and he's living on, let's say, the 15th floor of a nice high-rise building. And so what do? Do you take the stairs? I hope not, unless you're like a triathlete. No, you're probably going to get in an elevator, right?
Uh-huh.
And what do you do when you get in that elevator? You just walk in and push a button and up you go.
Yes.
At least that's what you think you're doing. You're actually putting your faith, trust, and your entire life in the hands of a complete stranger. And do you want to do that? Well, the only thing we have to go on is the trust that the architect and the building manager hired a competent professional,
yes,
to design and engineer that elevator in such a way that when you push the button, up you go and not look out below, right? So there are a number of financial professionals out there. There are attorneys, there are, yeah, financial planners, there are investment advisors, there's registered reps, there's, mm-hmm, independent investment advisors, and there are 400,000 life insurance agents across the United States. Just the life insurance agents alone, Sari, that's one insurance agent for every 800 Americans.
Wow.
So how does that feel, right? If there were 400,000 elevator techs, would you feel confident knowing that every single one of them had your best interest at heart, knew what they were doing when they engineered your elevator?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your uncle was, a heart surgeon, would you just go to him because, he just stumbled across a couple of scalpels and started doing some surgeries? No way, So there are a number of financial professionals out there who claim that they know what they're doing when it comes, yeah, to this particular strategy.
Yes.
And there are too many people, I would say, out there who hang their shingles on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram or whatever, and they're saying that they are experts in this field when they are clearly not. In fact, I've unfortunately had to see people who thought they had bank on yourself designed policies.
Uh-huh.
There are a number of names for this. There are, yeah, nicknames for this strategy out there. Infinite this and, yeah, family wealth banking that. And, much to the downside, I've seen people who thought they had a true bank on yourself designed policy end up have a policy that was full of commissions,
yeah,
fees. The policy's cash is imploding on itself and eating itself alive with, mm-hmm, internal costs.
Mm-hmm.
It's even, maybe it's still tied to a stock market sub-account index, or the fund itself might be tied to actual market impacting results, which could, uh-huh, collapse the policy's cash value. There are fees that could sometimes eat the thing alive. There are tax issues that I've seen people who thought they could get away with this without, mm-hmm, any taxes and come to find out they've got a major tax bill due to the IRS. This is just some of what could possibly happen. And there's a lot more, including legal issues going on across, yeah, the country with poorly designed policies, increasing costs without the permission or knowledge of the policyholders. So I hate to paint such a gloomy picture there, Sari, but it really matters who's engineering your financial products, and specifically this particular one, because it takes so much nuance. So I better stop there before I go into why bank on yourself professionals, but any feedback or experience you've had there?
Yeah. So I want to thank you so much for mentioning that. And I wanted to kind of add a question there. So using the bank on yourself concept, right? We're using high cash value whole life insurance. Now, that doesn't mean that any person with a life insurance license could help you in that matter. Did I understand that correctly?
You've got it exactly right. Yeah. There are a lot of people who think they can, but they don't necessarily have the chumps to do so.
Mm-hmm. And this is where Pamela Yellen's group comes in, right? Bank on Yourself. And there's this additional layer of credentials where we have to go through a final exam, modules. We have to be accepted into the program. We have continuing education requirements. Can you talk more about that part?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll tell a story. So Nelson Nash was the gentleman who many years ago stumbled across this concept of improving the efficiency of the life insurance contract, and specifically dividend paying whole life insurance.
Uh-huh.
And we might get into why he specifically looked at that particular chassis later on, if you'd like to. But he was an evangelist by every stretch of the imagination. He was out there every weekend traveling the country, doing two-day workshops, doing deep dive seminars, teaching people, teaching regular folk, teaching financial professionals how this strategy saved his bacon in the last real estate crash when he was going through all this in the late 70s and early 80s. And he was very good about getting the word out. And he has since passed away, so I have nothing but good things to say about him. One thing that he couldn't do or wasn't able to do, mm-hmm. because we're all only one person, was he couldn't hold and protect the concept. He did a great job getting it out there, but he wasn't shepherding it. He didn't put a lot of the trademarks and IP protections around it. And so there became a lot of people knocking it off. You know, it's sort of like Xerox or Kleenex. You know, if you don't protect your brand, it's going to be diluted.
Yes.
So he came across and he started to partner with someone named Pamela Yellen in the late 90s, early 2000s, and they got together and started to protect the concept. She retooled it, rebranded it, and calls it Bank on Yourself. And mm-hmm. not just the branding of the product or the process, but also created a training series that you described, a certification process, an ongoing education process, a mastermind. We have to stay in good standing with this mastermind. If we get kicked out, we can no longer post that we are a Bank on Yourself professional. It's a lot like any other credentialing process mm-hmm. that you might get as a doctor or a certified financial planner or whatever. And that, I think, is what protects the consumer. It's a lot like when you go to the grocery store, sometimes you'll see USDA organic on some food. You know what you're getting when you get a Bank on Yourself professional. Mm-hmm. You know that it's been designed correctly from the get-go.
That makes sense. And this helps also the clients make sure that what they're getting is the actual product, right? The actual structure of the product. Mm-hmm. Again, back to just having a life license, right? It doesn't mean that if you have a life insurance license and you have a few contracts with some carriers that you could do this exact thing. The policy, it has to be from a limited amount of companies. I think we only work with three companies who do this exact thing. And then the way those policies are structured, this is kind of like what it takes to be a bank on yourself professional. And when it comes to like the structure of it, right? We know, and for listeners who know us and know what we do, we know that it's through cash value whole life insurance. I've come across some other clients and podcast hosts and other people out there in the community who also do similar to what we do, but in the sense of like index universal life policy. And you and I both know that you can't use index universal life with the bank on yourself concept. But can you share more of that like for the audience so that they know?
Yeah, absolutely. On our podcast, we went through a total of 29 different check marks. When you get ready to take off on an airplane, uh-huh. apparently the flight crew has this long series of checklists. And even though they've flown the plane 1,000 times, they do that checklist religiously because they know if they skip one, if they don't use that checklist, it's going to end up, you know, being a disaster for the whole plane. And that's true with bank on yourself policies.
Mm-hmm.
All the consumer has to do is get on the airplane and fly, to use that metaphor. But the pilots and the crew, they're going through a long checklist to make sure that they've done the right thing for their customers. Or in this case, as a bank on yourself professional, we go through a long litany of pieces and parts. Does this policy have paid up additions? Has the insurance company paid dividends for over 100 years? We want to make sure that that's strong. Is it a mutually owned life insurance company? Will the policy loan interest compound or is it simple?
Yes.
Is there, you know, a variable rate or a fixed rate? Is it compounding for me or against me? Is there a chronic illness or long-term care or accelerated benefit rider? Has there been any variation, standard deviation on the dividend over the last, say, 12 years showing flagging signs of financial strength? These are all things that have to be asked before you get into a lifelong commitment with a company. Okay, so that's whole life insurance. Now, outside of whole life insurance, there are a whole nother set of cash value products out there that are still permanent, called permanent cash value life insurance, but they are using a different chassis underneath other than whole life insurance. And without boring your audience too much, the only one that's been around for hundreds of years is dividend paying whole life insurance. In the late 70s, variable products came on the scene. In the early 80s, universal products came on the scene. In the late 90s, indexed universal policies came on the scene. Each of them were responding to the needs and demands of the consumer for various reasons, which we probably don't have time to get into. But the underlying fundamental reality of both variable and universal contracts, so life insurance contracts, think of it this way. It's like annually renewable term insurance with a side fund in the stock market or an index. That's all it is. It's annually renewable term insurance. We'll talk about that.
Yes.
With a side fund in some sort of investment or index watching an investment. So that's sort of what is the other cash value products. There are no other cash value life insurance products besides those. So what is variable life insurance? Well, it's that annually renewable term. Let's break that down. What is annual renewable term insurance? It's the idea that every year they're going to check out your age. All right, Sari's got another birthday. He's got another candle on the birthday cake. So we need to raise the price on him to live another year and to rent our death benefit. That's annually renewable term insurance. It's like a landlord who's guaranteeing you that he's going to raise the rent on you every year for the rest of your life, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. So how does that sound? Do you want to sign up already, right?
It sounds unpredictable and it sounds costly.
Yeah. Well, just to give you some idea here, I'll give you an example. Here's someone who's 30 years old. I'm looking at a universal indexed universal life contract, which uses the same annual renewable term insurance for $1,000 of death benefit. We at age 30 for $1,000 of death benefit, every $1,000 of death benefit for a 30-year-old non-smoker, reasonable health is about 12 cents. That doesn't sound too bad. 12 cents for $1,000. That's a great deal, right? When you're 30, that's not a bad deal. But when you're 65, that same $1,000 now costs you $1.88.
So what is that difference?
That's a mega difference. I mean, that's more than a tenfold increase right there over, over what is that, 35 years?
35,
And when are you most likely to die? Well, probably in your later years, right?
Yeah.
So at age 65, it was $1.88. 1 year later, it's $2.08. So it went up by 20 cents in 1 year. By age 70, it's $3.12. By age 75, it's $5.33 just for the same $1,000. Do you see what's happening there, Sari?
The insurance company is taking more away from the ultimate life insurance, right? Because the person's aging, and then ultimately even take it away from the cash value component of the policy.
Say some more about that. How is it that the cash value gets taken away?
Yeah. So every year you have like, you have two components, right? You have your cash value component and then you have your life insurance component. And then every year, if it's in, if it's an index universal life policy, then every year, the, like, as you mentioned, the cost of insurance is increasing. So that's going to come out of your cash value, which explains how some people could fund a universal life policy for like 30 years. And they look at their cash value and it's like a fraction of when they started. Why? Because of the fees that have been eating into the policy throughout the years.
You're so right. Yeah. Either you're going to have to pay more premium every single year for the rest of your life, including your retirement, or you're going to have to pull money out of your cash value to cover that bogey, which is getting more expensive every year.
Exactly. And then when you throw in the component of loans now into that mix, it makes things kind of a little bit worse for the client, right?
Yeah. Well, now you've got the additional complexity of borrowing against.
Yeah.
Now, why would we want to borrow from a life insurance policy? What's an example? When might we want to do that? Well, maybe retirement, right? That's one example. And when you're in retirement, you're borrowing money against life insurance policies. And some people who aren't familiar with this will balk at that and say, "Well, why would I borrow money to buy groceries? That seems crazy." So, Siri, why is it maybe still a good idea to consider that as a stream of income in retirement?
Taxes. So after you've taken out money beyond your bases, you've withdrawn money beyond your bases, the loans that come out afterwards essentially are tax-free, assuming it was in a modified endowment contract.
Now, and do you have to pay these loans off, for your groceries and grandkids and?
No, you don't have to because you're collateralizing the policy. And if something were to happen to you, the insurance company would take that out of the life insurance in the later years, out of a bigger pot of money.
Now that works beautifully with whole life insurance. And thank you for helping me with that. That works beautifully with whole life insurance. There's everything is fixed. There's no gotchas, no surprises. With universal life, with variable life, when you start to age, you're not just concerned about paying premiums. Now you've got to take money out of this contract. And remember, everything is grabbing. It's like hungry, hungry hippos. You remember that game as a kid? Yeah, you got the increasing cost of insurance is gobbling up cash. You're trying to grab some of that cash for your groceries, for your grandkids, and all that. And the premium still has to be paid. There's no way to stop the premiums on a universal life or a variable life contract. It must be paid for the rest of your life as long as that contract is to be enforced. So I'm looking, for example, at a guy. He was mid-50s when I started to talk to him. He was 55. He was putting in 28,000 bucks a year into a index universal life contract. 28,000 bucks a year. At that point, he had had the policy for 6 years. And at that point, he had $80,000 of cash value, of accumulated value, not the surrender value, but the account's value was only 80 grand. Now think about that for a minute. 28,000 times six. What is that? Help me out with
About
it.
180, close to 180.
Let's see. I'm sorry. Let me do this math here really quick.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. It's actually 170,000 bucks. Very good, man. Very cool. Well, that math in the afternoon for me is not my strong suit. So yeah, 170 grand. Now, how much did he have in his policy? He had 80,000 bucks. How does that sound? Does that just wow you? Not really. That doesn't wow me. Now, he did have a almost $1 million death benefit, but it was starting to come down already. He was only 6 years into his contract, and the death benefit was coming down from 973 to 972 to 970, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so now fast forward. He's been funding it now for 15 years. He's now 65 years old. He stops putting money into the policy. He now takes the minimum premium, which is 3 grand a year, out of the policy to cover itself. He also is taking, again, there's the first hungry hippo. The second hungry hippo is the withdrawals he wants to take. So we're taking 50 grand a year to spend on groceries and grandkids. And the third hippo is the increasing cost of insurance as he's now 65 and 66 and 67 and so on. And guess what? This policy runs out, guaranteed it runs out in just 4 years after he retires.
It even says it in the illustration, right?
That's
Guaranteed
right.
zero at a certain time period.
He runs out of money in just 4 years. Can you imagine owning something, pumping 28 grand a year into something for 15 years? Only to have it zap $0, lost everything in just 4 years into retirement. That's unbelievable. You took 50 grand a year for 4 years. That's 200 grand that you enjoyed. And what's 28,000 times 16 years? 28,200 times 16. That's 451,000 bucks, and he only pulled out 200 grand.
That was a good deal for the insurance company, not for him.
Sure. Yeah. Now, if we have moderate success in an index, some people say, well, Mark, they're going to do better than the guaranteed. Well, guess what? He makes it another 5 years and then it still runs dry. All right. By the time he's 71, it still shows $0. He's lapsed the policy. He's out of cash. And what? He has a taxable problem on his hands. So that's why I don't like indexed universal life for the retirement side.
And this is where a lot of agents even say that there's a 0% floor. So you can't, so even if the index, for example, the S&P 500 goes down, your policy won't go down. That might be true, but we still have the fees still eating into it. Just because the stock market, just because the returns from a from the market perspective don't decrease your policy, the annual renewable term will renew will decrease your policy.
That's right. To use my hippo analogy, we've successfully avoided the market's hippo eating from our trough here. But unfortunately, we have the insurance expenses tacked on, which are getting hungrier every single year.
Mm-hmm. And then just to slightly touch on variable universal life, it's exactly what everything we're talking about now, plus the actual component of you can lose cash value and you can lose life insurance because of market downturns.
Yep. We're back to four hippos at that point.
Okay. Awesome. Now, when it's a properly designed a bank on yourself type whole life policy from a bank on yourself professional, we're avoiding the annual renewable term, right? The opposite happens, actually. The policy ends up costing you less in the future. There is no market volatility at all with the whole life policy. You get the guaranteed growth plus the dividends. Even though dividends are not guaranteed, we only work with, as you mentioned, insurance companies that have been paying dividends for well over 100 years. So there's a high degree of certainty that you're going to get those dividends. What else? So the term, the volatility, what are some of the other differences that are in favor for the client?
You may have mentioned, but there is no increasing insurance expense. As you said earlier, there's a level amount. In fact, what we look at most of the time when we see whole life insurance properly structured, the bank on yourself way, we can see that the costs are certainly there in the first few years.
Yeah.
You out of your premium, you might have somewhere between 65 and 80% of your money in the first year.
Yeah.
The rest would have gone to the expenses of the death benefit. There's no getting around that. We always recommend folks don't do bank on yourself if you're just caring about this year's rate of return. We want lifetime wealth accumulation, not this year's rate of return. Mm-hmm. So if you can get past that first 2 or 3 years, somewhere around year 4 or 5 or so, the increase of our cash is greater than the premium we paid.
Yes.
Let me say that again, because that's pretty important. Well, let me have you do it there, Sari. I mean, why don't you tell me, why is it important that our premium, that our cash values increase is greater than the premium we pay, say, in year 4?
It proves to you that it's becoming more efficient, right? So like in year 4, you put, for example, if it's $10,000 a year into the policy, year 4, you put $10,000 in, it might be $10,800 in growth in cash value. That right there shows you now the policy is becoming more efficient. The fees are drastically going down now in the policy at that point because you're earning more in the policy than you're paying into it. And then even we could even take it a step further. Some of the policies that I've structured are only 7-pay policies. That means it'd be like $10,000 a year for 7 years. The policy now breaks even. So the cash value now exceeds the premiums you put into it. And guess what? It keeps growing after that. The dividends still keep growing. You still get the guaranteed interest. Even the life insurance keeps growing at that point. Mm-hmm. So there's no way that you could do that with a universal life policy where you only pay for 7 years and then it keeps growing after that. You have to keep paying the premiums, as you mentioned, right?
That's right. Yeah. And we've been really focused today on the retirement side of things. But let me just briefly touch on what happens when you borrow against index universal or variable life products during your working years, when let's say you want to invest in some real estate or whatnot. Yeah. Again, most people are sold this idea of a wash loan. And you know, that sounds great. I love to wash my loans, I guess. I don't know why you'd want to wash anything. It sounds like money laundering to me, but that's okay. I'm happy to unpack this a little bit, because with whole life insurance, you get arbitrage. When you use a wash loan with index universal life, you get zero.
Yeah.
So which one sounds better to you? Well, you know, what is arbitrage? How would you define arbitrage from your perspective, Sari?
Yeah. The difference between what you paid and what you earned, as you taught me.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, I'm sure someone else smarter than me certainly taught me. But the idea is, hey, if Sari, if you give me $3,000 and I gave you back $10,000, your arbitrage would be $7,000.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's a good deal for you. You would do that deal again and again and again as often as you could.
Yes.
And you taught me that this gets more efficient the longer you have your whole life insurance policy. In fact, you gave me an example, and I thought it was a really, you know, genius example. You show a single premium policy. And I can go through those numbers. I've almost got them memorized here, Sari, unless you have them too. Would you want me to go through that?
If you can, please. Yeah, that'd be great. Yep.
I'll try my best to go off memory here, but there's a gentleman who's 45, I believe, when he starts his 40 years old, excuse me, 40 years old when he starts. He puts in $400,000 single premium policy. Okay. Now we can get into the tax implications, but let's set that aside for a minute. We throw 400 grand into a life insurance policy. he's able to borrow 378. Well, he's able to access 378,000. He borrows out 360,000 in the first year. So that's very efficient for life insurance. He decides to borrow it out, put it into a real estate deal that he then pays back after the eighth year. It's totally paid off.
Yes.
He ends up paying about $53,000 of arbitrage. Oh, excuse me, $53,000 of loan interest.
Yes.
And his cash value is now $507,000. So wait a minute. Let's step back for a minute. He put in $400.
Yes.
He borrowed out $360 and paid some interest to do so. He paid about $53,000 in interest. By the way, that works out to about 2.1% annual percentage rate. That's very cost efficient, especially in today's interest rate environment. And still, the policy compounds and grows on the entire cash value, even the $360 that he had borrowed out, giving him a total cash value of $507,000. That's an increase of $107,000.
Yeah.
So just walking all the way back to the to home base here, he made $107,000. He only paid $53,000. That's a pretty good deal by any stretch of the imagination. That means his arbitrage, let's do the math on that,
is so it was a 107 gain total minus the 53,000.
Yep.
So about
$54,000 was his arbitrage. Exactly. How many times would you do that deal?
As many times I'll always borrow money from a life policy. No matter how wealthy I get, I'll always borrow money and pay interest in the life insurance company to borrow against my policy.
There it is right there, guys. I mean, I'm with you all the way on that. Sari, me too, by the way.
And this is where, like, when you have people who criticize using cash value whole life insurance, they, like, one of the things they say is you have to pay interest to borrow your own money. Where is the sense in that? Well, here's the sense. You just mentioned it.
Yeah, right.
Because
right.
When you borrow that money and you pay interest to the insurance company, you keep earning interest on your money. And eventually, if it's properly structured, if it's a dividend paying whole life insurance policy, the bank on yourself way, you'll have the arbitrage. Your policy will increase over what you paid to borrow that money.
It's beautiful. It's a thing to behold. It's uninterrupted compound growth. It's what Albert Einstein said was the eighth wonder of the world. Mm-hmm. Now, comparing this to universal contracts and these wonderful wash loans, how would you like to earn $53,000 and pay $53,000? Sari, doesn't that just feel great to you? I mean, you end up with what? $0 of arbitrage.
Yeah.
So which of those two numbers, $54,000 of arbitrage with whole life, or $0 with universal, which of those two numbers would you rather have?
I rather have the 54,000. And imagine if you did this in real estate, which a lot of clients do. Like in that example you mentioned, you borrow $360,000. Let's just say you put that into a real estate property. Let's just say over 8 years, it turns into like $600,000. You made money in the real estate deal and you made money in your life policy at the same time. So now you could probably do another policy and then repeat that whole process all over again.
Beautiful. I love it. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so at the end of the day, it comes down to what is it you need your money doing for you? And do you trust the person who's working with you to set the policy up correctly so that it helps you accomplish what you're trying to do? There's too many ways to break this. There's too many ways for that elevator to snap and fall. Don't mess around with this. Again, once it's designed correctly, all you have to do is push that button and up you go. You don't have to stress about all this stuff. That's what Sari and other Bank on Yourself professionals are here for. But that's the really important thing that I think too many people just trying to get their research from YouTube aren't finding out until it's too late.
Awesome. Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining us again for the second time on this podcast. And thank you for all your help and your mentoring and support. How can listeners learn more about the importance of working with a Bank on Yourself professional and the importance of only using cash value whole life insurance?
Well, hey, you know, my podcast is chock full of content and you've been gracious enough to be a guest several times. Sari, you're one of the very few people who've been invited multiple times to be a guest. So thank you for returning the favor and having me on your awesome show. Our show is not your average financial podcast. You can about have every question answered on some episode. We've got over 250 episodes over there. So add that to your list of subscriptions. And Sari is a Bank on Yourself professional. So I highly endorse, encourage. I've seen his great work with clients. Everyone at least reach out to Sari and have a quick 15-minute call. I'd be happy to specifically speak to you guys and say this to you face-to-face, but I'm saying it you know, from the rooftops today. He's the real deal, and he knows what he's doing when it comes to building these policies correctly. So, Sari, what is your website, man? How do folks work with you?
Yeah, so it's easy. Thinkinglikeabank.com. Like, just like the podcast, Thinking Like a Bank, but the website, thinkinglikeabank.com.
I love it. I just think that's one of the coolest URLs in the internet space. So good work getting that one.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's F-I-N assetprotection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.